So we gotta go out here and we gotta protest a little bit to let them know you better pay us what we are worth. When we talk about foundational Black American families, when we talk about foundational people of Appalachian descent, you're talking about the birth of the wealth of this country. When you talk about West Virginia, you talk about the secession of what happened after the Civil War, you're talking about a legacy. You're talking about great wealth. You're talking about great prosperity. Dr. John Henry Clark told us best, we were the only civilization to have three golden ages. Every other empire didn't make it past one. But for some reason, Black people just had enough love in them to just keep on going and rolling.
At the end of the day, at the end of the day, you better run in some type of direction. Cause the people going nowhere are the ones that are flexing. I'm not trying to be a preacher, I was never a reverend, but I can take your ass to church and show you glimpses of heaven. You better run in some type of direction. Cause the people going nowhere are the ones that are flexing. I'm not trying to be a preacher, I was never a reverend, but I can take your ass to church and show you glimpses of heaven. You better
We're back with Black Enrichment. Thank you, everybody. I am your host, Thaddy B on the mic. Thaddy is Breckenridge here with a special guest. You know, I talk about it's very, very important, you know, to talk about issues in your own community and then allow those priorities and those platforms to then fill those cups. And when we all bring our cups together that are then running over, we can have us a great feast. This is a brother that speaks great testament and action to that. Aaron Hackett, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Thaddeus. I appreciate you having me on. I'm excited for this conversation, man.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. I met you, you know, doing the great grind, doing the great work in grassroots organizing. And when we talk about the soil shaping a platform and the narrative and not letting it be from the top down, you've been one of those people speaking to the testament. You've been in Appalachia fighting hard. You've been out there with the brother Corey Roman, you know, supporting other Appalachians as well. And so it's great to just on here. You know, what you been up to?
Oh, man, I've just been working on the Fire Pit Pod, which you know you've been a guest on twice.
Yes, shout out.
A lot of fun doing that, just having conversations with all kinds of people from around West Virginia, and just getting back, trying to find things to get into, because I was living in Florida for a while, moved away like so many do, just looking for work and opportunity that tends to be lacking in West Virginia. But now that I'm back, you know, we got an election cycle coming up. We got a lot of key issues that are going to be on the forefront in West Virginia. And, you know, continuing to help people like Corey. You mentioned him, an amazing representative of his community in Martinsburg. Does a lot of good work. Just is there just to help the people. His motivation is very authentic.
Yes.
Just continuing to do those kind of things.
Oh, yeah. And that's exactly the word I was thinking. It was authentic. Like, when we were hanging out at the summer jam, you know, up there in Shepherdstown, like we were just all hanging out, like it was just authentic, just the conversations that we were having between, like, you know, food that was going on and music and things going around, and like, you know, the relationship that we can also have out of organizing with you, invite me to your fantasy league, and also on the Fire Pit Pod, which is a wonderful, you know, shout out to that. Go over there on Spotify, Fire Pit Pod. It is a wonderful conversation that, you know, things arise out of it, like how we can actually organize. But the platform to just sit back and be comfortable with you asking questions and the way that things arise, I think it shows a true testament to real conversation in Appalachia, because that's how we are. We talk over a fire pit. We talk over a meal. And then significant issues arise, and then we talk about acting together. And that goes in the great testament of, you know, what we're talking about today with the 100-year anniversary on Blair Mountain, having a conversation about that, to a communication between communities that would not typically be conversing, would not typically be thinking that these issues are something that they could act on, and how they came into fruition to make a grassroots movement And so, you know, as we celebrate this 100-year anniversary, and as you find the testaments of trials and tribulations traveling to Florida and coming back, what does this in this moment mean to you and some of the things that we are encountering in the political stratosphere in Appalachia and even globally and, you know, worldwide, nationwide? What does this anniversary mean to you in this time, in this moment?
Oh, man, that's a heavy question. I love the history around Blair Mountain, and I love what it meant. You had, and we were talking about this before we started, you had a lot of Black folks from the South mm-hmm. who were working as coal miners in West Virginia, and you had people who were poor white Appalachians, and you had recent European immigrants who were coming over and being recruited directly by the coal companies. Yeah. And you had all of these people who, I mean, I don't know if you would call them anti-racist by today's standards, but they recognized with the unions that they were significantly stronger together.
Yeah.
And they had common goals. You know, they were all living in the same tent cities after they were evicted from their company housing. Like they came to recognize that they came from different backgrounds. They had different experiences, but they were both dying in the coal mines. They were all getting mm-hmm. kicked out of their houses. They were getting just abused by these companies. And it got to the point where one of my favorite stories from, you know, the coal wars is where the miners would hold coal company cafeteria workers at gunpoint and force them to serve everybody in the same room.
Mm.
And like that sort of thing is just so powerful to me looking back in the 1910s and 20s, like that was ahead of its time. And you talk about West Virginia often being behind the times.
Yeah.
So that to me is just so powerful. And I feel like it's unfortunate that so much of this history is hidden on a national level. But I hope that it starts to change and people start to learn this history. And I've seen articles from like Time Magazine or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Time, but some national outlets starting to talk about Blair Mountain and things like that. So to me, you start to look at today and it's just, you know, people have to look at how we're stronger together and have a lot of common goals, even though oftentimes we come from different backgrounds.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just at Tamarack today, looking at some of the festivities that they had there. They had some books, I can't remember his name. I think it was Bill Williams. And Michael Klein. I do know the Kleins from up towards my way in Elkins. They've done a lot of stuff with NPR, a lot of great broadcasts. But the stuff that they were talking about was like real truth and facts. And there's a small, rupture in the accuracy of what is being, you know, especially from the Mine Museum. And I don't think that's to no fault of their own. I think it's a testament to oral history that we've had traditionally here in West Virginia. So it's hard to finally now document it, especially whenever we talk about the oppressors at hand who are probably destroying a lot of the active history. So to actually, you know, look back at it 100 years later and match it up to see how these people were coming and actually find how communication is bringing us together again. And not only organizing, but to find the accuracy of this history. I think it's a true testament to our time about, you know, who we are and what it actually means to us and what we mean to cherish it. So that whenever it does reach that national audience, that it's going to be the best of the best. I mean, because you think about the Civil War and people are still reminded to this day, West Virginia's heavy involvement in that. And to not Western Virginia. It's not so much that it's something that we're working towards, it's something that is so active and it's like evolving and working on itself. So you know, what does that mean to you too? It's like we're working and organizing in like the same fashion in this time. You know, how significant is it to you that, you know, that we are eager to communicate with each other? And how also is it that we communicate in a very accurate term when we're working against oppressive systems that are trying to, you know, dissuade and downplay the significance of why we are bringing our issues to the highest platform?
Yeah. Let me think on that one for a second. I feel like you hit on a bunch of different points. And
I did. Let me put it in a bite-sized piece for you. I'm sorry for that. You know, like I said, there's a lot of significant things, and they try and say, hey, this is the bigger picture, especially when we think about, we just saw Manchin put the pause on that.
Right.
You know, it's significant to us. It means something right now. Don't downplay our significance right now. Don't downplay the history that's brought us to this moment. You know, what is something that you could, that you tell people every day that keeps them in the fight? Or maybe something you tell yourself every day that keeps yourself in the fight to keep on going, that makes this history significant to how we're acting right now?
Right. Well, to me, I think politics is, it's all about people. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be, like, for example, whenever I try to encourage people to run for office, or, you know, when I'm a part of that, like, recruiting process, I try to support people on a personal level as well. Like, yeah. I want to see people succeed in winning a race, but also just in life in general. Yeah. I want people to be happy and have good quality of life. And I feel like bringing people together, that has to be an aspect of it. Like, obviously, you know, if I'm working on somebody or with somebody on a specific issue, like, you're doing the work, but I just feel like it has to be personal as well, and you have to be building those relationships and connecting with people. And I think, like going back to what I said with Boy Mountain, where you had people who were holding the cafeteria workers for the coal companies at gunpoint, like, they mm-hmm. were standing up for each other. Because over time, they kind of developed those relationships where they were going to eat together.
Yeah.
Like, forget if, you know, there was segregation and the coal companies and all these racist people who had power in this country wanted them to be separate and at each other's throats. They wanted to eat together. And they did. Like, I feel like you just have to have people's backs all the time. And it yeah. has to be when you're working on the issues, and it has to be in every aspect of life. And you just want to build those relationships and those friendships, because that's what it's all about. It's mm-hmm. it's building community, and it's supporting people all the way through, all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, that's empowerment. I mean, in definition and picture, that is empowerment. And that's also stronger than that, a code of conduct, a code of behavior that, like you said, forget the segregation. Like, we're going to eat together. And with eating together, we're going to strengthen our communication and our community and how we actually not only empower each other, but we control the narrative and we control our lives and we stop the things that are harming us today. And it's very strong. I mean, it's very important that we touch that significance. Like you said, the passion. The thing that lights the fire in people's belly, you know, that's faith at its most simplest definition, at its most simplest platform. That is something that like I said, what is it that keeps you up, that even gets you up? And you say that it's the significance. It's getting the people on a personal level. What can help them and become a better person? And in becoming a better person, they are the then living model and standard for a better people and a better family and a better community. And with moving like this, we saw these coal miners address the small things and just the ways that they ate to then be the foundation of how they work together to win and get what they needed to be done and get their significant issues addressed. And so it's so powerful because it not only builds the community and it builds the people that take the action, but more importantly, it builds a stronger code that's what's understood does not have to be explained because it's now a family tie. And I think that that's a very important thing. And I think it's very forgotten in politics today because we see so much with power influenced in politics and leverage influenced in politics that there's an individual power rather than the people power and the collective and the family.
Right.
And it's all about the individual and getting to that individual at an individual power state rather than a community code of how we expect people to respond and being accountable to that. And so that's a very important testament to touch on. And I just wanted to extend that on what you said there, because I don't think that a lot of times we think about the whole people aspect because it has keyed into an individual thing or one individual person. So you want to extend on that a little bit more, or maybe even ask me a question possibly before we transition?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to hear you kind of speak from your perspective. What does this whole thing mean to you, the 100th anniversary? What's some of your favorite history from the Cold Wars in general, or the Mine Wars?
Yeah. Well, I just like it. Well, you know, a lot of the things that I had, you know, researched was a lot of the Black families and the Black coal mines that were a part of this. And what I was finding out was, you know, we spoke about it a lot, like we said before the show, was that you had in this generation, you had teenagers about 16, 17, understanding that on their 18th birthday that they were going to go see a certain family member up towards the north, and they were going to get their freedom at 18. And they came into these coal camps working in terrible conditions, and this is the same thing as slavery. I just got shipped to my second phase of slavery. That's what you find out. You know, a lot of the cemeteries and stuff too, you know, they're called colored cemeteries. And then you would start seeing that the unions were starting to attract a lot of Black families, where at first there was a belief in unions because of so much of the workforce from the plantations closing and chattel slavery ending after the Civil War, that there was an influx to the workforce. And so that was a lot of the first intentions of the unions. But the one wonderful thing about the UMWA was the notice and attraction that West Virginia's platform was gaining, because the slaves coming from the American South and realizing this is the same thing as chattel slavery, and finally having the bridge, the communication to the impoverished white families in the coal camps saying, yeah, this is the same as slavery. Well, hold up. So you're telling me that this whole contract for me to have a house isn't really my house, and it's the same thing as whenever you had a hut on the plant. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So we are tied together, because now we're seeing, as I've said a lot of times on this show, they hate Black people, especially because they're Black. But the only successfully victimize us, along with other minorities, along with other impoverished whites, is because we are poor. That is the only reason that they can successfully victimize them. And they caught on to that code very quick. So when I look at that and I look to where we are now in the history of Blair Mountain, in the history of where we are in Appalachia, I'm like, it's starting to happen all over again. The people in the hollers that may have been blinded by the coal companies in the early 2010s are now realizing, hey, we ain't got no jobs. They all trying to bust our head open at this point. We got to come together and realize we need something that works for us. And I'm starting to see those ties and those communication happen a lot more. The Crown Act. I had a good part of Black families. A lot of the significance was a Black brother individually that brought us to the Crown Act. There was a lot of impoverished white people that reached out to me to understand the significance of this issue and were in turn for it. And in turn, we had a unanimous council decision to get the ordinance passed. So I'm looking at the significance of that history then, and I'm looking at it now, and I'm thinking about the communication. That's one of the best things about the history you know, of Blair Mountain that I do love and that I do love to engage in and partake in. So, you know, just look on that. I'm glad you asked me that question, because whenever I look at the significance of Black people and Black families, and then I look at the significance of Appalachian families, that now we're tying in the significant issues the same to now bring that up, that is one of the things that I'm starting to see now that is starting to work in our favor. And it goes back to, you know, what you said in the cafeteria situation. There's a code. There's a code of conduct and communication to carry accountability and to hold those oppressing us to understand why and now act out. So, as we transition onto that, that's one of the things of history there. What you think about that, brother?
Yeah, I think that's excellent. And you made a lot of good points. And correct me if I'm wrong, but about 1 in 4 coal miners at the time were Black, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So there was a good, it's not like it was some extreme minority where there were a lot of Black coal miners. And I feel like the stereotypes about coal miners in West Virginia in general, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't think about that history. So I think that that's something that like needs to be amplified when we talk about Blair Mountain is, you know, the contribution that Black folks had to the movement, to the labor movement. Mm-hmm. And that whole history. And I also think, you know, you talk about how, you know, Black folks from the South coming to West Virginia and showing how the company towns were similar to being on a plantation. Like, for this country's entire history, I mean, Black folks have had it way worse. There's the whole experience. And you talk about how the economy's set up. And now we're getting to a point where there are a lot of poor white people, and they're like, well, now our conditions are bad too. And it's just amazing how that privilege, once that privilege goes away, I mean, the white privilege is always there, but once that, like, you can't, if you're a white person, you can't go down to a grocery store and get a job and buy a house and pay for a family of four. So it's like there's that struggle too, and going back to Blair Mountain, we need that same kind of communication that you've been talking about, where we're like, all right, everybody's struggling. Some people in this country have always been struggling, and it's about time that we build a broad movement to actually change this shit.
Yeah. I mean, a very broad movement. Hopefully not as violent. I hope not. But yes, I mean, absolutely, with the same intensity, with the same passion, with the same fire. Brother, I mean, I appreciate the response on that too. I mean, there's forced camaraderie in those minds. I mean, to get a lot of those carts and those buggies, 2-man, 3-man, 4-man jobs. So whether or not There's something that you've been hearing since you came up of racist vigor in your bones, you gotta work with this Black brother right now. Y'all got to fix it, because this job is not going to get done from just a common state of everyday presence. And, you know, some of the things that you've seen, I mean, have you ever been down here to the exhibition coal mine in Beckley?
Unfortunately, I have not.
If you ever,
I would like to one day though.
Oh yes, it's awesome. If you ever get the chance, come on down. I used to always do it. Whenever I was in elementary school, and you know, it takes you through there, and just, you know, as small as some of these holes were, and using these small kerosene capsules to be able to see, you know, there was communication even from the starting every day of the workforce that was forcing this to happen. And I think that, you know, when we look in today's times and, you know, where we want to work, and even in the common workplace, and how cubicles have taken over and small little office spaces disconnecting us from one another, panopticizing us, we'll get into that a little bit deeper later, but there's this channel that just could not keep the communication away. And once the communication was met, you know, I just got to talk about, you know, I know I keep harping on the communication, but I think it's a lot of things that we do lose sight of because, you know, social media helps us take that for granted. You know, we see what somebody's going on, because if we want to see what's going on with somebody, we can go to their page, we can message them. If we're more intimate, we could. But the everyday relations, I think that going back to, like you said, on a personal level, communicating with people, that is one of the things that has always been wonderful about West Virginia, is that you've had the conversation with people and the love and the lovely biscuit making people rather than the fast talking bagel people. as me and my friends have always as related it to. No shame. That's always one thing that we've always kept. And so I do think that it's ironic looking back 100 years later. Once again, it's our communities and having conversations like this that are bringing us to root up. Real quick, we're going to go into a commercial, non-commercial break. When we get back, me and Aaron are going to go a little bit more in depth on what this means for the future as we look on and the fundamental phases that we have seen throughout the Civil War, the Cold Wars, and now, today, presently, in Appalachia and America, and what this means for working families to progress and destroy the system against us. You don't want to miss this. We're live on Black in Richmond.
Ready to sparkle from the inside out? Well, tap into Euphoric Dreams, the online shop for insightful and inspiring spiritual advice, natural hair products, and handcrafted pieces. We're talking one-on-one conversations and exposure for all local Black artists and producers, astronomical guides for everything astrology, poems, and everything essentially Black and beautiful. I visit her as my number one stop shop for all things surrounding my health and wealth. So together, let's flourish in 2021 and beyond. Visit at leuphoric.com. That's leuphoriqe.com. That's leuphoriqe.com. And tap in, family. Colds are coming. So warm on up and head over to Fire Pit Pod with Aaron Hackett and Troy Miller as they nestle around the campfire with the Appalachians you know and love and sparking heartwarming stories and conversations that you don't want to miss. So go on over to Fire Pit Podcast on Spotify right now.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for staying on. Back here with my brother Aaron. We are just having a ball. We are having a blast with you, family. Glad to have you here as we celebrate, Blair 100, the 100th anniversary of Blair Mountain and the coal mine wars, home of Appalachia. So a little bit that we want to talk about on the second half here is the context of how we've just seen the phases and just how well to be in the epicenter of people getting together, communicating and using their environment and their resources to the best of their ability, from the phases of things like the Civil War, extended on to the Cold Wars of 1921. And then what we're talking about right now, revolutionizing ourselves in politics and how we are moving ourselves to be significant leaders in this time and beating certain portrayals and channels that are trying to portray us in ways that are not correct. So with my guest, it is only nice that we start off with the floor. Aaron, you know, we were talking about this a little bit over break. You know, what are some of the things that we've seen in not only the history of like the Civil War and, you know, Blair Mountain, but, you know, what is the sort of occasion right now that we're seeing that we have to beat, and some of the things that are really bringing us together in this fight for working families to keep us disciplined and on par?
Yeah, and I'm happy to talk on this subject because I feel like the communication directly is just so important. And we were talking about how a lot of the times in the news, you watch like something like Fox News, and you know, if there are some protests going on, they'll just flash a couple of pictures, maybe a video of a building on fire. And mm-hmm. then they're just going to go on this whole rant about how every city in America is just in ruins and being burnt down. And it's just not true. So mm-hmm. when you look at these things, you have to view people based on actual real life experiences. Mm-hmm. If you just look to the news to base your judgments of people, it's going to be completely manipulated. Mm-hmm. And on purpose, because there have always been forces in this country that want to keep people divided, from the Civil War, like you said, mm-hmm. To Blair Mountain. And I mean, media has always played a huge role in Blair Mountain. You had the coal companies that tried to bury that history, mm-hmm. because they knew how powerful it was. And so today, it has to go back to just real life conversations. Like, for me, I'm white. I don't know what it's like personally to be black in America or in West Virginia or Appalachia. So I'm going to listen and I'm going to try to understand to the best of my ability. And I'm certainly not going to base my perspective on that based on what a talking head on a major media outlet says. I'm going to try to talk to people directly, and that's how I'm going to formulate how I feel on an issue. And I feel like that just has to be the case all the time with all groups of people, because West Virginia just in general has the worst stereotypes. And I mean, when I was in Florida, like, I proudly wore that badge of being from West Virginia, and I always tried to tell people how it actually was. And I'm sure a lot of people that I talked to had never actually talked to somebody who is as passionate about West Virginia as me. So just ultimately, I feel like you just have to have those conversations and be willing to listen and learn from experiences from other people. Because we don't all experience the same things. That's just that's just life.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, with that, to extend that, there is, you know, let me go in my philosophy rhetoric bag. Foucault talks about the gaze, and he spoke about the panopticon in particular. And really what he noticed was is that at first, when we were talking about medical practices were in the home. Doctors would come out and visit you in your bed, see what's going on. And then it moved from taking those people that were ill out of the home and out of the presence of the family somewhere else. What this was slowly doing was alienating the ill from common society and the family. They were taking them away, regarding them as something different to be portrayed. Later, we saw this in Jeremy Bentham's Panopticon, where the prisons would have the tower in the middle and all the cells would surround it with a window. When the light would shine, you would see the shadow of the inmate. But get the thing, it's one tower in the middle of surrounding hundreds, maybe even thousands of inmates. That tower is only possibly manned by 1 to 3 guards at the most. Jeremy Bentham, one of the fathers of utilitarianism, showed that one guard in one tower could have the power to hold hundreds of thousands of men to not move from their cell. Because as long as all of them see the tower, they do not want to move. But thousands against one obviously would win the fight. Mm-hmm. This same psychological trick is the same way that they try to portray us and alienate us from one another, but also psychologically oppress us from trying to revolt against the system. Because what does that sound like? Oh my gosh, a plantation, a coal camp. There's the one company store in the middle with all the houses surrounding it. At once could take that one small place down. But why would they, when the company store stands on the highest of the hills? And why? Or the house on the plantation. This was the key differences. And they did not need a philosophy course like you guys just endured and that I have extended myself hours on. It was because of communication, the application of what happened in the Civil War, the portrayals that were beginning to happen in the Cold Wars, and what we're starting to notice now that Aaron just showed us right now with things and platforms on the media that try to show us just one window and one literal channel of what's going on, and trying to display this everywhere to dissuade us and to oppress us from acting out, when in the many and the masses, we are the ones that control the standard and narrative. So, you know, speaking on that, Aaron, I just want to ask you too, you know, we talked about it, you know, brother, it's been a wonderful testament, you know, seeing you have lived the tale. This is not something that you can act, because, you know, we see that you have sat down and listened to people with, you know, friends and successful platforms that you've had, you know, with like Brother Corey and things like that. You have walked the walk and talked the talk. So what are some testaments that you see that are ironic to these past historical phases of the Cold Wars and the Civil War that have kind of shaped your framework on the need of discipline, the need of long-term strategy, the certain things that we've seen in the presence of lack of communication, but how we can communicate to have discipline and code within ourselves to shape long-term strategies and platforms that work for us and that are progressive?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be a long-term strategy. You have to have that kind of game plan. And for me, what keeps me going is that I feel like we have no choice, because if we don't just keep trying to bring people together, they win. The same forces that we've been talking about that try to keep people divided,
yep,
that have tried to keep people in company towns, that try to keep people on plantations, that try to keep millions of people in America today at each other's throats. If we don't try to find any way possible to cut through that, it's going to stay the same. Mm. And things changed. We had a civil war. Things have changed. There was the Battle of Blair Mountain, and then you had the New Deal era, and things changed for working class people. And in the 60s, you had an end to segregation, and things changed because people strategized long term and just had no choice but to keep fighting and keep trying to change things. And I mean, it goes back to what I said earlier too. You got to lift people up on a personal level. You want to have to see people succeed just in life in general. And I mean, like with Corey, I want to see that dude become like a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to just stop with a city council. And that's the kind of long-term planning that I'm talking about. Like, yeah. I know he's willing to work, and people who are willing to work and who have a vision for what West Virginia could be and for what we all could be if we had the ability to reach our potential, like, that's inspiring. It's inspiring that he wants to take that path, and, you know, just helping people like that is amazing to me. Exactly. I feel like I could just rant on this and just never stop, but
well, because I mean, one, it's long term, so of course you could rant. That's long term. it's also the you know, we're talking about it right now, the battle of Blair Mountain. These are small battles that we put ourselves in to win, to show us and show the enemy, most importantly, that we're coming, we're building. The war is there, and the war right now is a war on white supremacy. White supremacy is anything that is white or non-white that does not agree with this ideology to keep its system of oppression at bay. It is a system that actively only support itself through non-justice and non-competition. What are we, the people who bring justice and have competed ideas to build a platform and have had conversation to build the significant issues, that we will now come together and fight against that enemy? But we are going to have to win battles first to not only show the enemy, but show ourselves that we have what is in us to conquer it. And so it's going to take battles of Blair Mountain. It's going to take political battles of certain elections. It's going to take baby steps of taking city councils to then eventually be in D.C. It's the baby steps and the battles that we are going to win, family, that is going to ultimately shape us to be the family that is going to be able to endure and win the war. And that is exactly the resemblance that we want to model here on the 100-year anniversary of Blair Mountain. To let our ancestors understand that all their efforts were not in vain, were never forgotten, were battles that shaped movements like the women's rights later on, that then would go in evolution and revolutionize into civil rights for Black families, that then would allow immigration, other families from outside to come in, and us actually become the community that we want us to be and that we would like to design and shape ourselves to be. And so these are the battles. These are the small, minute, shaping platforms. And when we empower each other, there is absolutely no idea to where we can go. But it starts with communication. And it starts with conversations just like this. And the ability to find the accuracy and talk about the history of our ancestors together and revolutionize and act out and win the war. Brother Aaron, this has been a wonderful time. It's been a blessing. I've had a blast. I hope everybody had at least just a quarter of fun that we had, because we had a ball. I give the last words to you, man. Any of your thoughts, shout out to Fire Pit Pod, where we can find you at, what you got going on this fall and winter, and how we can support you. And have the last word. Give us a good one. What's going on, brother? Thank you for everything.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It's always a good time when we have a conversation. I hope to see you up in my part of the state, or I'll have to come down there at some point.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the Fire Pit Pod, I mean, that goes back to what we've been talking about this whole time, just having conversations. That's the whole purpose of that podcast. And I'm going to keep on doing it and keep on having guests, and you're definitely going to have to co-host it again. But I just encourage everybody who's listening to this to talk to the people in your life, keep pushing them to be the best that they can be, and just surround yourself with those kind of people. And that's what it's all about. And we can keep building, keep gaining momentum, and keep changing things.
Absolutely, brother. Those are wonderful words. It's a wonderful outlook. And that is a true testament to not only who Aaron is, but the people that we need in this movement that keeps us going and keeps the faith to push public policy and bridge the path for life that we deserve. Brother, it was a wonderful time. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Everybody, shout out to the Fire Pit Pod. Visit it over there on Spotify. We are going to see you on the next broadcast of Black Enrichment. Have a wonderful time in the last episodes, and share this episode. It's your boy Daddy B on the mic. Be blessed. Peace.